Welcome to Jewish History Soundbites podcast with Yehuda Geber. Immerse yourself in the rich tapestry of Jewish history as we explore fascinating tales and uncover hidden gems from our glorious past. Brought to you by our proud sponsor, Cross River, a leader at the intersection of financial services and technology, committed to empowering the communities they serve. Cross River's steadfast support fuels our mission to preserve our heritage and foster a vibrant future for all. Contact Cross River through their website at crossriver.com.
A date which will live in infamy.
Both of those projects, initiatives, got off the ground because of the Gerer Rebbe.
The 11 Olympic team members slain in West Germany.
Out of the 24 who were killed were Americans who had come to learn in Hebron.
I say 1 million Jewish children who were made to be cut in Husserl.
Whoever heard such beautiful words, Hadunavecha Talmud Bavli.
It is never too little, it is never too late, and it is never enough.
Jewish History Soundbites, bringing alive the world of our glorious past. Here is our host, live from Jerusalem, Jewish historian and tour guide.
Jewish History Soundbites, and this episode, a special episode in honor of Pesach. We'll take a little break from our discussions and series of Tsarist Russia. We're going to get back to that, but I wanted to talk about the topic of the history of machine matzah, or at least part of the history. To do all of it would be way beyond the scope of one episode. Just brief review, and the reason is because my good friend Eliezer Brutt, a famous scholar, he was involved with the publication of a new book about the original machine matzah controversy in Galicia in the 19th century, a book in Hebrew. So I was just at his house the other day. He lives right near me in Beit Shemesh, and so I purchased the book from him and was reading it the last few days, and I discussed it quite a bit with him, and it's on my mind, and it's a great topic, and I figured in honor of Pesach, we'll do not exactly a review, a book review. I mean, part of it will be discussing the book itself, but part of it is just going to be just the history. It's an old controversy whether machine matzah is permissible to bake matzah with a machine and then to utilize and eat that matzah on Pesach. This is a new book, just came out a few weeks ago. And Eliezer Brutt, I think he was involved in the publishing. I don't know if he is, I think someone else or a few other people, whatever. I don't know if he gets all the credit or not. What's the difference? What I'm going to discuss is not halacha, no halacha. No halacha on this podcast. There's plenty of other podcasts out there that you can learn the halacha of Pesach and machine matzah and whatever. Here I'm just going to do the history, and I'm going to do my best not to take sides in this famous dispute between the opponents and the supporters of machine matzah use. Even though I have some clear biases here, I'm going to try not to take sides. This is a historical narrative that I find quite interesting, and I think everyone else does as well. But obviously, for your own halachic practice, follow your family custom and or consult a competent halachic authority. Do not rely on anything said on this podcast. This is for entertainment purposes only. This was a disclaimer, and I hope that's clear. It's a very contentious topic with tons of history and tons of sources. There's tons written on this. There's possibly hundreds of articles in both academic and popular literature, and Sfarim have been written on this. Eliezer Brutt, in right in the beginning of the book, he has a partial list of sources on the first page of the book, and he lists literally tens of sources there, and it's only a partial list. There has been so much written about it. So if you want to read up on it, it's endless. But a lot of what's written about it kind of misses the point. There is some material out there that where I'm drawing from what I think is the main point here. Most of the story, when people talk about the story of the controversy about machine matzah, the focus of the story is whether machine matzah was permitted, why was it permitted, why was it forbidden, by whom was it permitted, by whom was it forbidden, was it actually preferred by others, etc., etc., etc. I think it's really a much broader historical narrative because it's at the nexus of tradition and modernity. And that's really the issue here. When I, right after I had purchased the book, so another resident of Beit Shemesh, Professor Maoz Kahana, who I know very well and I quote a lot on this podcast. He's written some excellent works, a great historian. So I was talking to him shortly after I had purchased the book, and I was discussing the book with him. This is all the last week or so. He encapsulated it very nicely. He said that what the most interesting stories in history are when it's contrasts. It's not good or bad or permitted or forbidden. That's not a contrast, but rather it's like in the case over here in this instance, it's contrast because it's two. I guess permitted and forbidden is one way to look at it as opposites, or good or bad is one way to look at it, another way to look at it as opposites. But here it's actually more interesting because it pits halacha against tradition. In other words, halachically, it was either okay at worst. Likely, it was even better halachically than hand matzah. And we'll discuss that. A lot of the historical material written on it discusses how this was a great improvement again, the lax conditions and the very human conditions of a matzah bakery, of a hand matzah bakery, causes mistakes and problems and all kinds of issues, whereas if it's a machine, and then that minimizes the problems, and halachically it's either better than hand matzah or it's as good as hand matzah. The problem with it is that it's not traditional. It's different. It's new. So the traditionalists are saying, keep to the tradition and use the hand matzah, whereas the halachists, the ones who want to keep the halacha, they're saying it's just as good, if not better. So let's use the new machine matzah. So it's halacha against tradition, which is the very essence of orthodoxy in the modern era. In other words, the ones who forbade it, or who were opposed to using machine matzah, were essentially, it was not a halachic position that they were taking, which is a fascinating historical idea, because it's the mid-19th century. There were some halachic issues, I'm not going to minimize that, obviously, but it was rarely that it was substantial halachic grounds. Most of those who forbade it, almost never saw the machine. They discussed the fact that poor people would lose their source of income because they worked in the hand matzah bakeries. The main issue across the boards, and all the ones who forbade it, they said it's because it was new. Chadash asur min ha-Torah. It's a machine. How can machines do something that human beings are supposed to do with mesiris nefesh and everything? Others who forbade it, we're going to see about the Divrei Chaim and others, they said it's forbidden for secret reasons. Another major reason that was discussed by the Galitzia rabbis who forbade it, who were opposed to it, they said it because German rabbis from Ashkenaz, from Germany, they permitted it. And how can German rabbis tell Galitzia rabbis what's permitted and what's forbidden? Galitzia rabbis are capable of that, not German rabbis. We're going to see all this. We're going to discuss all this. My point is that it was only occasionally that it was halachic concerns. Generally, it was contradictory halachic concerns or partial, or sometimes these halachic concerns became obsolete when new and better machines came, were developed and invented or improved as time went on. The ones who permitted it, the rabbis who permitted it, often pointed to its halachic superiority and preferred the machine purely on halachic grounds. And they also emphasized that the ones who permitted it also emphasized that they actually examined the machine itself, unlike almost all of those who were in the opposition. So this is a very, very strange historical story here of halacha against tradition. And that's what Professor Kahn was trying to say, that it's like a real contrast. So what's really going on here? And I think we need to take a step back and take it as a macro view and re-examine what does it mean, orthodoxy, in the modern era, in the 19th century, when facing the changes and challenges of the modern era, which is, you know, one of the favorite topics we speak about on this podcast. And a claim that I've made on this podcast several times is that orthodoxy is a movement which is a product of the modern era. And I've gotten lots of flack for daring to make this comment. And I wish I could claim credit for formulating it, but as far as I know, it's a widely accepted in academic circles, and I've read about it in quite a few places. But I think that the history of the matzah machine matzah controversy over here is the perfect opportunity to flesh out the details of what this actually means. What does it mean that orthodoxy is a product, is a movement which is a product of the modern era? The machine matzah is the perfect illustration of this, because in the pre-modern era, Judaism, before the modernity and all the external challenges and changes and secularization and all that, so before that, in the pre-modern era, Torah observance was simply that. It was Torah observance. From the 16th century and on, it primarily meant that halachically one follows the Shulchan Aruch. There was, you know, general Torah observance for whatever level of knowledge people had or had access to through rabbinical authority. Rabbinic Judaism, Torah Judaism, whatever you want to call it, that was the pre-modern era. The modern era brought with it all these changes and challenges and external changes and challenges and secularization eventually. And orthodoxy is developed as a response. No longer would one define their Torah observance by the pre-modern standard. Now, a person's religious identity, a person who is Torah observant, his religious identity is defined on the defensive, on their red lines, on what they aren't, on what they're against, on what they won't cross which red lines, about tradition, about their custom, about their insular moving inward, things like that. And there's lots to say about it, but instead of speaking in an abstract way, we'll use the machine matzah as the perfect illustration of this. Old halachic Judaism would embrace the change of a machine matzah. Why? Because it improved the halachic quality of the matzah baking process. And in the worst case scenario, it stayed the same, while it made it much cheaper and much quicker. So there's only what to gain from it. But orthodoxy, which is a product of the modern era, with its ideology of facing the challenges and confronting the challenges of the modern era, and its defense mechanisms of holding up tradition. So tradition and conservatism is suspicious of change, and therefore, because of the suspicions of change and because it's new, so they forego on the halachic issues to a certain extent. To a certain extent, I'm not denying that there were those who raised some halachic issues. And they opposed it primarily on traditional ideological grounds. They opposed it because it's new, because it's a machine, because it's going to take away the parnassa from the poor people, because it's the German Western rabbis who are permitting it, because the matzah is supposed to be round and these new matzahs are square, and all kinds of things like that. Primarily because it's new, chadash asr min ha-Torah. It's new, and machines are going to start doing everything, and some machines are going to be good, and some machines aren't, and people are going to get mixed up. They're going to think that you can use any machine. Another good contemporary illustration of this phenomenon, contemporary, I'm not going to get into it because it's a contemporary issue, is Tcheles. It's very similar. The traditionalists against the halachaists. The halachaists, they say, well, halacha to Tcheles, now we know what Tcheles is, so let's wear it, and then we can perform the halacha properly. But the traditionalists say, but it's against the Messiah, it's against the tradition, and the orthodoxy in the modern era, which is a product of the modern era, is defense, is red lines, is nothing new, and that's another great example of it, in case you want to compare it to something else. So we have halacha against tradition. Preferable from a purist halachic standpoint, not just permissible, it seemed to be actually preferable, but it's new. Tradition, conservatism, the modern era, orthodoxy, and that's what's so astounding. It's essentially an almost anti-halachic stance. I want to call it exactly an anti-halachic stance because there were some minimal halachic issues that were associated with it, but it was mostly because of this traditional thing. In fact, it's not brought in the book. I didn't see this cited in the book, and I didn't see it almost in any other source. I found this in my own research in the Sefer Emes VeEmuna, which is a fascinating Sefer. It's a Sefer of Hasidus. It's not a Sefer of history, but it has a lot of stories in there. It's about Kutsk. It's the Torah of Kutsk. And in the Sefer Emes VeEmuna, it cites a story with the Kutsker. And it says there that he, when Machine Matzah, we're going to see that his brother-in-law, the Chiddush Erim, was very, very opposed. He's one of the leaders of the opposition, opposed to Machine Matzah. Forbidden, completely forbidden. Not only that, the Kutzker's son-in-law, the Avnei Nezer, Avram Barnstein, the Avnei Nezer, the Kutzker's son-in-law, was also one of the leaders of the opposition. Very, very opposed. Machine Matzah is completely forbidden. So two people very close in the Kutzker circle. So the Kutzker himself, naturally, also, his position was that it was forbidden. No surprises there. But the story that they bring in the Emes VeEmuna, I didn't see anywhere else, I didn't see anyone citing this, very interesting, says that he asked his close chassid, Reb Chanuch Henoch of Alexander, the old Alexander Rebbe, we spoke about him once, and he says, can you research this from a halachic standpoint if machine matzahs are permissible or not? And his chassid, his close chassid, the Alter Rebbe of Alexander, came back to the Kutzker and he said, I cannot find anywhere, anything, any possible thing in halacha that would make it forbidden. It doesn't make any sense. It should be permitted if we look at it from a halachic standpoint. So the Kutzker said, okay, so from a halachic standpoint, it is permitted, then that means that it must be some soid, it must be something, a mystical reason. It has to be some secret mystical reason that's why it's forbidden, and therefore it's completely forbidden. That's what the Kutzker's response was. If we can't find the reason in the halacha, then it must be that there's a mystical reason for it to be forbidden, and therefore it's forbidden. Interesting, I had another personal story. When I was a bacher in the Mir, and if I was around yeshiva during the Pesach, so the yeshiva dining room was closed, and we very graciously, whoever was there, hung around yeshiva for Pesach, we were very graciously hosted by one of my rebbeim in the Mir, Rabbi Yamin Karlbach and his Rebbetzin Karlbach, wonderful people who hosted the whole group of bacherim from the Mir. Whoever was around, you know, I was obviously home for Yontif, but Cholomite, I sometimes hung around yeshiva, so I would go to eat by the Karlbachs. It was very nice, always very nice to eat there. Either way, so back in the day, Rebbetzin Karlbach's mother, Rebbetzin Esther Finkel of blessed memory, a very, very great tzaddikus, a special person, who I knew very well, she was still alive. She was a Greineman. Her father was Reb Shmuel Greineman. And Reb Shmuel Greineman, when she was growing up in the Greineman home, so Reb Shmuel Greineman was working in the United States, I think for MTJ, in the Yeshiva MTJ on the Lower East Side, I believe so. Either way, so he lived in America when his family lived in Israel. So Reb Shmuel Greineman's children were raised by his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law was the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish did not have any children, so she was raised by her uncle, the Chazon Ish. So I used to ask her from time to time, about different customs that she saw by the Chazon Ish, because she grew up in his home and was an eyewitness, and she was still talkative in those days. So we were sitting at the table and everyone was eating machine matzah. And I asked her, did your uncle, the Chazon Ish, did he eat machine matzah? And she looks at me and she says, Nit jeden Zach, was the Chazon Ish hat getan, hat er gemeint zol jeder einer tan. Not everything that the Chazon Ish did he intend that everyone else should do? And that was her answer. She wouldn't answer. And afterwards, I subsequently did the research, and the Chazon Ish only ate hand matzah, no machine matzah. So what she was saying was that the Chazon Ish never issued a psak, that halachically you have to eat hand matzah, not machine matzah. The Chazon Ish was a halacha man. He would have written about it as a psak. He would have issued it as a psak to his talmidim, to in his sefer, whatever it was. And she was saying, he never did that. He never did that as a psak. Nisht yedin zach was the Chazon Ish al-katon, hot er gemein zol yeder ein etan. So he never meant it that other people should do it too. So that was her answer. So again, this fine line. He's only eating hand matzah, but he never said that you have to eat hand matzah. In fact, I remembered when I was researching this episode, I remembered reading somewhere that Reb Chaim Isaac Grudzinski ate only machine matzah. Not only did he permit it, he only ate machine matzah. He never ate hand matzah because he felt that the machine matzah was better. That's what I remembered reading. So I was trying to look it up. I found it in, I think, at least three articles. I found that it said that Reb Chaim Iser only ate machine matzah. This is where I found all three articles that I found, it didn't bring any source. And I'm very suspicious when there's no source. So I couldn't find an article that actually brought a source. So I know the worldwide expert is someone who I'm close with, Reb David Kamenetsky. He's a worldwide expert on Reb Chaim Iser. He's already written one volume book, biography of Reb Chaim Iser. He's working on a second volume. So I emailed him, asked him, do you know anything about Reb Chaim Iser eating machine matzah? Because I can't find the source. I'm going to actually read you the email that I wrote to him and his response. I assume you've seen Eliezer Brutt's new book about the history of the machine matzah controversy. I was a bit surprised that Reb Chaim Iser's view wasn't at all discussed there, as I seem to remember that he had a strong position in favor of machine matzah and that he himself exclusively used it on Pesach. I can't seem to remember where I saw it, though. Can you shed any light sources or insight on this? I do not have any good sources, only lousy ones. I recall reading an article some time ago about where it was mentioned, but I can't find it. And then I'm not going to read the whole email. I showed them that I wrote it. I saw it in a few other articles, but they didn't bring the source. So I am not sure what the deal is. And I also asked them at the end, what was your grandfather's position on machine matzah? So his response, I'm going to read you his response, Reb David Kamenetsky, telling me about Reb Chaim Iser. Both my grandfather and father, Reb David Kamenetsky's father is Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, and his grandfather is Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. So both my grandfather and father were makbid to only eat hand matzah. I assume that was the Lithuanian custom. I would assume that if Reb Chaim Iser would have eaten machine matzah, everyone would have known about it. And I'm not quoting him here. That's the end of the quote. He told me subsequently in further correspondence that he doesn't know of any source that Reb Chaim Iser ate machine matzah. So there you go. So there's all these articles saying that Reb Chaim Iser did, but there's no source for it. And here the expert on Reb Chaim Iser says that as far as he knows, Reb Chaim Iser did not eat machine matzah. I then told him that I read that Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer only ate machine matzah. No hand matzah ever. Even by his Seder, he only ate machine matzah. Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer. So he says, I'm quoting him again, there's no proof from Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer, because it was known that the machines in Yerushalayim were way better than the hand matzah bakeries, to the point that the hand matzah was considered chametz. So that's a good thing to know, because we know we're going to speak, hopefully if we have time, about the major machine matzah versus hand matzah controversy that also spread to Yerushalayim. It wasn't only in Galicia and other places, it was also in Yerushalayim. And Reb Issa Zalman in his later years lived in Yerushalayim, so machine seems to be better. In fact, when we speak about the Yerushalayim point of the controversy, we'll see Reb Shmuel Salant and Reb Zalman and Reb David Baran and Reb Naftali Amsterdam and a lot of the big tzaddikim in Yerushalayim all ate machine matzah, all permitted machine matzah, and they all ate machine matzah. So you see in Yerushalayim at least, of course the Hasidim in Yerushalayim didn't, right? So it was again the Hasidic Misnagdic or Litvish, whatever you want to call it, divide. But he's saying that in Yerushalayim it was different. Machine matzah was much better than the hand matzah. I remember another person saying, before we get to the some of the things in the book, we didn't even get to most of the book yet. My father-in-law, he told me that that he heard in the name of the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav was a very, very extreme about only eating hand matzah, and he, of course, following the Divrei Chaim of Tzanz, machine matzah is chametz, and you can't eat machine matzah and everything, so of course only hand matzah. My father-in-law told me, I don't know what his source was, but apparently the Satmar Rav said that even if machine matzah is not chametz, but there's a malach that comes and makes it chametz. That's how bad it is. So again, my point of all this is that it's something beyond halacha here. It's something, and like I said, it's about new, it's about tradition, and that's where it comes down to. Once I mentioned the Yerushalayim story, I just want to dive into it for a minute, because I mentioned Reb Shmuel Salant, Reb Zalman, Reb David Baran, and many others permitted it, and as did Reb Naftali Amsterdam, the student of Yisrael Salanter, who moved to Yerushalayim in his old age, but among others also permitted it, the machine matzah. But the love of a Rebbe and all the Hasidic rabbis, they forbade it. They were opposed to it. Now, this is, as usual, in the old yeshiva of Yerushalayim, which with its endless disputes had more to do with money than the actual kashrus concerns. But that's an old yeshiva of Yerushalayim thing. They had a million disputes, and most of it was, when you really boiled it down, it was more about, you know, things related to money and stuff. Another factor was that the Yerushalayim hand matzah bakeries, like I said before, were so bad that machine matzahs were certainly a kashrus improvement in that context. That's what I mentioned before. My own assessment of the status and reality of the machine matzah in Lithuania, for instance, this is a guess, because we're going to speak about it in Galicia, in Germany, in England, in Yerushalayim, in America. There was almost no information about Lithuania itself. There's a few. There's a psak of Reb David Karliner and Reb Blaz Rabinovich of Minsk. Very few. We don't have anything from Reb Chaim Meiser, like I said, or the Aruch HaShulchan. We have something they said from the Chavetz Chaim that he didn't like the machine matzah. He's very suspicious of it, but he didn't really check into it, so he doesn't know. But then his son, during World War I, brought him machine matzah from Moscow because they didn't have any other matzah, and then they did use it. But then his son says that it could be he himself didn't, just the Radin Yeshiva used it. But again, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chavetz Chaim, doesn't really say much about it. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, we don't know what he says about it. There's so much not known in Lithuania. Why Dafka Lithuania? Do we not know so much? So my guess is that the historian, and this is what it seems from reading some of the tshuvas of Lazar Rabinovich of Minsk and a couple of others that I saw in the book here, of Lazar Brod's book. He brings a lot of the, whoever put it together, brings a lot of the other material on it, is that the historical reality in Lithuania at the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries is that they didn't really have these machines. It seems to have reached Lithuania at a much later stage. And since that's the case, they were unfamiliar with it, and it was very, very new, even at a late stage. So the Lithuanian rabbis did not contend with these issues as early as they did in some of the other countries. That's what I gather. I could be wrong. If anyone has more information on what was going on in Lithuania, I would love to hear about it. Either way, to the book itself, we'll just get a few minutes of the book itself. We talked so much about just around the topic. The book is great because it organizes all the material on the topic. It republishes some out-of-print stuff. Much of the material in the book is printed for the first time, and it's all brought in one book for the very first time. So it's great. It's really, really good. It's called Tshuvas Gedolei Yisrael Benidoin Matzos Mechayna BePesach. And then the subtitles are all the pamphlets that are gathered in the book. I like it because it brings everything together for the first time. It's all in Hebrew, obviously. It's all original, meaning there's very little history written. It's all just reprints of the original tshuvas and halachic responsa. My critique of the book is that it's very disorganized. There's no proper index. It's hard to get a full cohesive picture of the narrative because it's just like kind of just copy pasting, putting it all onto the page, but it's not really organizing it well. But hopefully they'll get it better when they reprint it the next time. The book is divided into five parts. In the beginning, it has Eliezer Brutt's overview of the initial dispute controversy in Galicia in the late 1850s, with additional background information regarding machine matzahs in general. The second part of the book is probably the best part of the book. It's excellent. It's a well-researched and well-written article by the noted historian Rabbi Chil Goldhaber regarding the machine matzah dispute in Yerushalayim in the early 1900s. Then, the third part of the book is the original pamphlet called Maida'a LeBeis Yisrael, which is the ones who prohibited the use of machine matzah in Galicia. And it was organized by Rav Shlomo Kluger, the great Paisik of Galicia, who we just recently had an episode about. You may want to check that out. In 1859, this was published. The fourth part of the book is the original response to that pamphlet. It's called Bittul Maida, of the ones who permitted the use of machine matzah as a response to the previous pamphlet. And this was organized by Rav Yosef Shol Natan Zun, the Shoyal Umeshiv, who was the rabbi in Lvov. It was also published in 1859. The fifth section of the book is a rather long section. In this book, it's entitled Maida'a Rabba, and it includes a diverse and large collection of written material on this subject matter, both those for machine matzah and those against machine matzah from different time periods, different geographical locations, different contexts, halachic works, previously published works. Sometimes it's rare published works that are republished here, and there's even some that were manuscripts that are published here for the very first time. It's definitely the first time that all of this has been published together in one book to ease accessibility to the diverse sources. And the idea to understand the background of this whole story of the machine matzah is that the Industrial Revolution and the mechanization of labor is a fairly well-known and fairly documented phenomenon of the modern era. And it's most often discussed, the Industrial Revolution and the mechanization of labor, in the context of replacing human labor with machines and all of the accompanying social and economic labor challenges which arise as a result. And this, if you study American history or the history of the Industrial Revolution or British history, you will find this everywhere in the 19th century. This was a very, very contentious issue. That machines were replacing labor, human labor. And as we'll see, this major point is directly related to the dispute regarding the use of machine matzah. So machine matzah is just a product of the Industrial Revolution. And the wider context of the machine matzah is that machines are being invented to ease human labor, and it essentially replaces human labor at a cheaper and more efficient cost. So this machine matzah has to be seen in that context. The first documented use of a machine in the baking process of matzah took place in the historic Strasbourg area of France in 1838. This new machine received a kosher certification from local French rabbis, and no one seemed to have any issue with it. The use of the machine spread east. It spread into German cities over the ensuing decades, and all German rabbis, Ashkenaz German rabbis, who were consulted, they all permitted its use. It didn't seem to generate any controversy or dispute or dissent whatsoever as of this point. Some of these German rabbis, as we'll see soon, were among the greatest and renowned halachic authorities in the world at the time, and they all permitted it. So life continued rather peacefully for about 20 years. And then the matzah-making machine migrated further east, arriving in Galicia in 1857. Its destination this time was Krakow, the largest city in western Galicia. And then everything breaks loose. Just a casual geopolitical reminder, Krakow specifically, and Galicia more generally, is under the sovereignty of the Habsburg Austrian Empire in the 19th century. They're in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. They're not in Russia or Poland or anything like that. That's where Galicia is. In 1858, the rabbis of the city and its Beis Din of Krakow authorized the use of the matzah machine, permitting it for the Krakow Jewish community. So far, so good. The problem begins when a rabbinical figure in Krakow named Reb Chaim Nossen Dembitzer, who did not have any official position within the Kahal establishment, and he even had a strained relationship in the past with said establishment, decided that the use of the matzah machine was problematic. And Reb Chaim Nossen Dembitzer proceeded to initiate a correspondence with leading halachic authorities in Galicia, asking them about the permissibility of its use. His Rebbe, his mentor, despite their never having met, they only knew each other through correspondence, was Reb Shloime Kluger, the greatest halachic authority in Galicia and possibly the world at the time. We recently did a very popular episode about him. You might want to check that out. And based on what Reb Shloime Kluger heard from Rav Dembitzer, he decided to categorically forbid the use of the matzah machine. Reb Shloime Kluger never saw the machine or examined it. It was all based on the information provided to him by this Rav Dembitzer. This emerged as one of the most contentious issues in the entire dispute. Almost all of the rabbis who were opponents of the machine matzah never saw the machine in the first place. And they were opposed to it based on hearsay. And the opposite, almost all of the ones who permitted its use were after having examined it. There were a couple of exceptions on each side. Rav Shloime Kluger's psak was groundbreaking in several respects. He was the first major world-renowned Pesach to be opposed to the machine matzah. That's the first thing. Unlike everyone before him, everyone until that had permitted it. The second thing is that unlike the overwhelming subsequent prominent opponents of machine matzah, Rav Shloime Kluger was not a chassid. Most of the opponents were chassidim, Rav Shloime Kluger was not. He also penned several halachic responses on the topic, and this became another major issue with his opposition, specifically the Shoyel Umeshev, Rabbi Yosef Shoyel Natanzon. Aside from the fact that the Shoyel Umeshev kept on pointing out that Rabbi Shloime Kluger did not personally see the machine or apparently understand the mechanisms of how it worked, the Shoyel Umeshev, when examining the tshuvas of Rabbi Shloime Kluger, he said that it was very unlike the way Reb Shloime Kluger normally paskened halachic issues, very unlike the fashion he normally paskened in thousands of other documented discussions of his. He says, the Shoyel Umeshev said about Reb Shloime Kluger that Reb Shloime Kluger did not provide a coherent or consistent halachic framework for his opposition. He cited several different points, but each of his halachic responsum that he authored, he cited different concerns. So each time he came up with different things, and he did not mention the other ones. And this became one of the major issues taken up by the Shoyel Umeshev in his response, that he was not successful in understanding the issue from Reb Shloime Kluger's perspective. And we'll return to this shortly. Reb Chaim Nossen Dembitzer also asked the Shoyel Umeshev, Reb Yosef Shoyel Natanzon in Lvov, rabbi of this major eastern Galician city, who was also a major prominent Pesach, as well as the Shoyel Umeshev's brother-in-law, Reb Yosef Shoyel Natanzon's brother-in-law, Reb Mordechai Ittinger. The Shoyel Umeshev examined the machine and unequivocally permitted its use, and he would emerge as the major primary campaigner in favor of the use of the machine matzah. His brother-in-law, Reb Mordechai Ittinger, on the other hand, with whom he had an interesting relationship, perhaps for another time, also a bit of a strained relationship. So this brother-in-law actually did see the machine. He was one of the only ones who were the opponents, who the forbidders, to have actually seen the machine, and he went and forbade its use. Many of the subsequent opponents, who, as mentioned, never saw the machine, they relied instead on Rav Mordechai Ittinger's testimony. So they said, well, Rav Mordechai Ittinger saw it, and he's not in favor, he's opposed to it, so therefore, based on what he said, we're also against it. Now, all this time, the emerging controversy was maintained through private correspondence between these rabbis, and it was not at all in the public sphere. This all changed that year, that same year, 1858, when it spilled onto the pages of the Hamagid newspaper. This is one of the first ever Hebrew newspapers, which is a topic for another time, one of the only ones, and probably the most prominent in the world at this time, prior to the rise of the great Russian Jewish newspapers, Hamelitz and others. They were in Russia, this is in Galicia. Hamagid was where many leading issues of the day went down. So if it made it to Hamagid, then naturally that meant that it was now a broiling public issue. It's unclear how it first made it to the newspaper, but once it did, Things spun out of control rather rapidly because various rabbis started to weigh in on the issue, either in support or opposition to the machine matzah, and with time the level of rhetoric rose, it got more personal, etc., etc. The next stage, and this is perhaps the most famous stage, is the publication the next year, in 1859, of the pamphlets, the Kuntresim, in opposition and then in support of the machine matzah. First was the opposition. Rav Dembitzer, in conjunction with Rav Shlomo Kluger, organized this Kuntres, and it was titled Maida'a LeBeis Yisrael, with all the letters from the prominent rabbis who forbade the use of the machine. 24 pages long, it was all included in this Kuntres. Rav Dembitzer, interestingly enough, did not include his own tshuva in this pamphlet, nor did he even attach his name to it. The Shailu Meshiv responded with a kuntres of his own entitled Bittul Maida the same year, that was 30 pages long, where he galvanized the support of major rabbis to write letters in support of the machine's permissibility of use. The language in these two kuntresim, in these pamphlets, is very strong. It gets insulting language, very personal, the rhetoric, name-calling. It's very often hard to read, but that's how emotionally charged this issue and how contentious it had become. Who were the primary rabbis opposing it and in favor of the use of the machine matzah at this stage? So in the opposition, we mentioned Rav Shlomo Kluger. We also mentioned the Chidushi Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, Rav Itcha Meir of Warsaw at that time, was before he moved to Ger, the Avnei Nezer, the Sachachava Rebbe, son-in-law of the Kutzker, the Divrei Chaim of Tzanz, who emerged as the most vocal one, who said it's chametz gamar, it's completely chametz, for secret reasons. He didn't want to reveal the reasons that he was saying that it's chametz gamar. I mentioned Rav Mordechai Ittinga, the brother-in-law of the Shalom Meshiv, Rav Chaim Nassen Dembitzer, I said. There's also Rav Ram Landau of Chechenov, Rav Yeshua Heschel Ashkenazi of Lublin, Rav Meir Orbach, the Imre Bina, although his position is in much dispute because it seems like he did permit it at a later stage. Reb Dov Ber Meizlish of Warsaw also was opposed to the machine matzah, and he also saw the machine. He's the only other one of the opposition, the ones who forbid it to have actually seen it. There was quite a few others who also forbade it as well. Like I said, none of them saw the machine. The ones who permitted its use, who was on the other team, it was like, you know, the teams, you have to get the teams here. So Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzon obviously was the leader, the Shaul Umeshiv, the Ksav Sofer of Preshburg, the son of the Ksav Sofer. In fact, in his tshuva, he writes that despite the fact that I subscribe to what my father said regarding Chodesh Aser Min HaTorah, but I examine the machine and it's excellent, so it must be permitted. It's interesting how he writes it like that. See, he's dealing with this issue that we've been discussing the whole time. Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz of Danzig, the author of the Tiferes Yisrael and Mishnayos, the aforementioned rabbinate of Krakow, Rabbi Yaakov Yekel Sharf of Oshpitzin, the Darki Yesher, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, the Aruch Lener in Germany, Rabbi Yitzchak Dov Bamberger, the Würzburger Rav in Germany, Rabbi Von Wolf Hamburger, the author of the Shares Kenim in Germany, the rabbis of Strasbourg in France, the rabbis of Frankfurt, Rabbi Yaakov a couple of Worms, and several other prominent Galician rabbis. So obviously many others joined on both sides as things developed at later stages, but this was the initial stage in Galicia in that dispute. What were the primary issues of those who were opposed to the machine matzah use? So number one, I mentioned some of these before. Number one, it took away jobs from poor people, because that's what machines did during the Industrial Revolution. Number two, the matzahs were square, not round, as they were traditionally. They even said in the pasuk, it says, Ugois matzois, it has to be the shape of a cake, and everyone knows that cakes are round and not square. Three, it will be a challenge to differentiate from one machine which is permitted to another one which is forbidden. Not every machine is going to be permitted, obviously. Number four, there were some actual halachic issues too. Some of them raised issues with lishma, or das that needs the knowledge of a human being, or the temperature is too hot or too cold, or the machine doesn't work with the dough the entire time, and I'm not so proficient in the halachas, but there were some real halachic issues too. And number five, the German rabbis permitted it, and German rabbis are unreliable. That's what Galician rabbis claimed. So, how can German rabbis permit something for us in Galicia? That was actually a reason to forbid it. It's unbelievable. Number six, and this is the most important reason, because it's new. This is what we've been saying the whole time. It's mentioned time after time and tshuva after tshuva. It's because it's new, it's a machine, it's new, it's new, it's not traditional. That's the real primary issue. Now, one of the classic and quite generic elements of this dispute is the constant claims that the other side would have changed their view based on them seeing the machine or based on seeing a new machine. And what would they, now that it's a new machine, like 40 years later when the dispute arises again somewhere else, they say, well, now it's a new machine, this is better. So the side that permits it will say, had the ones who were opposed to it seen this new machine, they would have said this is much better, and therefore they would have, even they would have permitted it. And of course, the ones who said it's forbidden, they said that the ones who permitted it 40 years ago, they would have seen this new machine, they would have said, oh, we permitted a different machine, this one would have been forbidden. And they had, maybe they had been, they didn't give the, have the correct information, maybe they changed their mind, they themselves didn't see it. It keeps on rising up from time to time. It rose in England and the United States in 1903, in Yerushalayim in 1906, excuse me, in early 1900s in Lithuania. There's a big dispute regarding the view of the Marsham. What did he permit it or forbid it? And everyone's fighting. What was the Marsham's position on the machine matzah? The Munkacher Rebbe, the Darkei Tshuva, and of course the Satmar Rav, they and many others, they go and they based on the Divrei Chaim. The Divrei Chaim of Tzanz says it's completely forbidden because of secret reasons. And everyone's saying, what's the secret reasons? The secret reasons is because it's new and because it's not traditional. And that's why it's Chometz Gomer. And that's why the Satmar Rav and others, they kept on forbidding it based on the Divrei Chaim. The Divrei Chaim never saw it, but he said that this is the secret reasons make it. By the way, the Shailo Meshev writes to the Divrei Chaim. He says, you can't paskin halachic issues because of secret reasons. He says, you know, recently we discussed a halachic issue about some sort of marriage or divorce. I forgot what it was. And there we discussed the reasons. That's how halacha works. We share and we discuss the reasons. You can't tell me that this time it's forbidden because of secret reasons. So the secret reasons of the Divrei Chaim becomes an issue as well. And that's a short little overview. There's, of course, lots more to say on this topic, but I think we've spoken enough. Enjoy your matzah, whether it's hand or machine. And I hope this didn't ruffle too many feathers here, but just giving over the history. This was Yehuda Geber with Jewish History Soundbites. You can reach me at yehuda@yehudageber.com for questions, comments, sources, tours, trips, sponsorships, and lectures. You can subscribe to Jewish History Soundbites, and you can post a rating or review. Tell your friends and family about Jewish History Soundbites. Spread the word. That's the best way to help the podcast, and I hope you enjoyed.